Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Can anybody tell that I'm not from around these parts? I always like to see that we've got the intelligent crowd here today. So I'm going to play you one of my favourite videos to start the session off. Seeing as I'm in Texas.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's bright.
My first love, you're every breath that I take, you're every step I make.
There you go. Nothing to do with the presentation. I just thought I'd like the video. So, okay. There is. I am English. So, if I say anything you don't understand, then it's our language, not yours. If you're after a translation, then talk to me afterwards. But I want to talk to you today about why, for the last 10 years, we've been banging on about the fact that customers are irrational. And what businesses do is they seem to want to fight it. And yet customers are irrational. So the whole area of customer experience is growing massively. I've been doing this now for some 10 years. And you know, why is it growing? Well, for our first book, we did some research and we found that 85% of senior business leaders said that just focusing on rational things was no longer sustainable. So what do we mean by rational things? I mean things like, you know, the classic Porter, 4 P's, yeah, price, place, promotion, etc. Just focusing on those things was no longer sustainable. Give me an example of that. A friend of mine, Derek, bought himself a Mercedes 4x4. And I went down the road to see Derek and I said, why did you buy this car? And Derek said, I bought this car because it's got a removable tow bar. Where is it? He said, oh, I've removed it. I said, well, what's the logic of that? And he said, well, I pulled a speedboat around at weekends. And he said that, I don't like having the tow bar there, so I like to take it off. But it made me think that we make decisions today based upon tiny, seemingly insignificant details, don't we? You know, back in the day, I used to buy a car because it was the most reliable car. Now we don't think about that. Yeah. Another example is what's driving this commoditization is just technology. And obviously, you know, we're in the heart of it here at South by Southwest. I got an email through a little while ago from Amazon, and it said, did I want to buy a DVD player for about $18? And my wife said, shall we get one? And I said, well, we've already got one. And she said, yeah, but they're $18. Yeah. And I said to her, well, where would we put it? And she said, well, we could put it in the front room. I said, but we don't have a telly there. And she said, well, we could buy one. Yeah. So that's what we did. Yeah. And now we've got a DVD and a TV in the front room and nobody ever watches it. But it was cheap. It was cheap. Yeah. And, you know, what's happening there? Mass commoditization, technology, internet, globalization of things is constantly driving things down. Organizations used to focus on the rational side of business, and that's driving mass commoditization. And so therefore you have to look at a new differentiator, and that differentiator is the experience that you start to give your customers. But organizations still think of customers as if they are logical beings. Yeah? And they build processes. And this is the traditional way of looking at customers. Just go into your businesses and look at your process maps, Six Sigma, all that type of stuff, mass commoditization of things. And the result of this view is very simple. And I'm a bit of a geek. I carry a camera around, obviously now my iPhone, to capture experiences. I've got a problem with my left eye. And I went to see the... I saw this advert for laser treatment, okay? And I phoned the person up and, said that I'm interested in laser treatment. And the woman said... she said, what's the marketing number? Yeah? And let me blow that up, right? The marketing number is down the bottom here, yeah? Now let me ask you a question. What type of person is phoning this advert? Yeah? People with good eyesight? Or people with bad? Not thinking about the customer, yeah? So there's the marketing code, not thinking about the customer. And yet I went to my hospital, and here's my eye, to the eye clinic, and it's big. It's yellow. Because people with bad eyesight may not be able to find their way to the clinic. Yeah? It's not rocket science. Yeah? How many of you wash their hair in the sink? So why is it hotels always put the shampoo by the sink? I wash my hair in the shower. Yeah? And yet they don't put the shampoo and the soap in the shower. Yeah? Little things that drive these behaviours. I was given a speech down at Vegas, and I went into this hotel room, and they had this person had left this compliment slip on there. It was a Venetian hotel. And it said, do not eat or drink anything that's from this minibar, because if you lift it out, you get charged. You know one of these ones where you open the minibar, you pull it out and you go, I'll have a Coke. Oh no, I'll have a Diet Coke. No, maybe I'll have a beer. And you go down in the morning, it's $150. Yeah, and you haven't had anything. But on the sign on the minibar, it said, for your convenience, refreshment removed will be automatically charged. This is for my convenience. They're doing this for me. Yeah. What this says to me is, you're stupid. Yeah. We think that you can't actually think about this stuff. This is the traditional way of designing an experience. Just thinking of customers from a transactional perspective. And yet customers are not transactional. This is some work we did with an insurance company over in England. And we basically were testing their customer experience. So we got a really interesting job. They said to us they would like us to take out an insurance policy on the car, and that they would like us to crash the car and then go through the whole claims policy. Yeah. So we had how do you crash a car safely? So we ended up reversing it into a tree. A woods. This van driver turned up. So we phoned up the call centre. What's the first question? So we just had an accident, phoned up the insurance company, and we said, just had an accident. What's the first question they asked? Are you all right? No, that's the first question they should have asked. What's the first question they asked? What's your policy number? Absolutely. What's your policy number? Yeah? And we go, I'm in the middle of a bloody forest. How do I know? Yeah? So we put the car up on this sort of low loader, and we just realised that we hadn't got a receipt for the car. So we turned around to the driver and said, look, you're just about to tow the car away. Could you give us a receipt? So he leaned over and he grabbed this McDonald's packet and he ripped it off and he wrote down the number. Yeah. And then when we got back to the office, we phoned the phone number and it didn't work. Yeah. But this is the mentality of businesses today. Building processes. And I'm using the word processes as opposed to experiences and not thinking about things from that customer perspective. And the issue for me is that now transfers itself into the social media space. So, on my way down here this week, I'm staying over at the Hilton Garden Inn, and I'm trying to do today is I'm trying to curse you. Okay, I'm trying to curse you with the same affliction that I have. Okay, which is I can't have a customer experience now without pulling it apart and trying to understand what's happening. All right. So I phoned up Hilton Garden Inn just to check my reservation was right. And anyway, long and short of it, is the first thing they've said on the phone is they've said, "Hi, this is Hilton Garden Inn. We want to exceed your expectation at every moment of contact." And I'm thinking, you bloody idiots. You can't afford to do that. No one can afford to do that. You can't afford to exceed expectations at all point of contact. Anyway, so it says, exceed expectation at every point of contact, and I've been waiting 10 minutes on the phone, so they've already failed, and I haven't even checked in yet. So I tweeted that. Then I got an online help back saying, "We're very sorry for this. We will forward your concerns to the brand management team." Now, you know, I know what they're talking about, but let's assume that it was my mum. Would she know? Well, she's probably not going to be on Twitter, actually, but there you go. But, you know, the brand management department. So I tweeted back, "Well, what's the brand management team got to do with that?" Yeah. So they then said, "Well, if you'd like any further assistance, please email me." You know, oh, bloody hell, better not answer that question. Yeah. So, you know, I guess the point I'm trying to make, it's transactional thinking that's now just been lifted and stuck into the social media environment. Yeah, it's about mindset. I've been doing this stuff for 15 years. 15 years now, okay? And there's one thing I've learned. Customer experience is about your mindset. Customer experience is about your mindset. Do you think about the customer or do you think about the organization and yourself? And that does not mean, let me be really, really, really clear, that does not mean giving customers everything they want, because you can't afford it. And we'll talk about that a bit more in a moment. So for me, there's a big difference between a process and an experience. And what we know is customers, you, me, here's a little surprise. Yeah, we are people. People are irrational. People are not Spock. We don't do rational things, and yet what organizations do is they design rational experiences. And what you have to do is embrace irrationality. So this is my daughter, okay? Very proud father. Abby has just passed her master's in conservation. She's gonna save the world, okay? And every night she goes to bed with a bunny rabbit that we bought her when she was 6 days old. Now, is that rational? I go fishing and I throw all the fish back. What's that about? You know, it's irrational. You probably served from the blurb, you know, how many times have you stuck by a lift and you start pressing the lift button and you press it 27 times? It's not going to come any quicker. How many times have you shouted at your computer or your iPhone? You know, it's nothing's going to happen. People are irrational. You have to design your experiences with that irrationality in mind. We get attached to things. I mean, this is Geek City, I'm one of them, yeah? I love my technology, and I use the word love. I do love it. It's brilliant. I don't want to be parted from it, but it's not a logical thing. And yet what we do is, you know, people put in stuff that's irrational all the time. You know, organizations. This is one of the ones I always like, on a label on a stroller, a removed child before folding. Isn't that pretty obvious? You know, on a blanket, not to be used as protection from tornado. Yeah. You can imagine it. There's a tornado coin. Quick, let's get under the blanket. On a packet of peanuts, it says, "Open packet, eat nuts." You know, well, bugger me, I didn't know that. And the other one they have on there, it says, "This packet may contain nuts." And you think, it bloody better do. You know, what is happening out here? So what is a customer experience? For us, a customer experience is this. And this is now our fourth definition of a customer experience. Okay? A customer experience is an interaction between the organization and the customer. Okay? It can be lots and lots of things. Okay? Interaction between the organization and the customer. See lots of people taking pictures of slides. I'm more than happy to give you copies of the slides after. If you tweet me or whatever, then I'll gladly send you a copy of the slides. It's an interaction between an organization and a customer. So it doesn't have to be face-to-face or over the phone. It can be many different places. It's as the customers perceive things. Okay? As the customers perceive things. So don't show me loads of data that tells me how great your delivery is if that's internal data. What I'm interested in is what our customers say. But it's also to do with the conscious and subconscious minds. And this is the second time I've spoken at South by Southwest. And I don't know about you, but maybe it's just me. I'm starting to see an increase in the number of speeches that are talking about the brain, psychology, all those things. I went to two great speeches yesterday. David Eagleman, really good book called Incognito. If you haven't read it, I would suggest you read it. Another one by Chip Connolly yesterday. And again, another good session. So, you know, it's to do with the person, conscious and subconscious mind. It's a blend, important word, of the organization's rational performance. It's about senses and it's about emotions. Okay? And all these things are intuitively measured against customers' expectation across all moments of contact. Okay, quick question. Hands up if you've been to India. Okay, hands up if you've been to the Congo. Great, I always get somebody. Right, so quick thing. Can I ask you to close your eyes? I would like you to imagine, in your mind, you've landed in the Congo. You're with your family and your friends. You've got out the airport. You've got to find your own way to your own hotel. I'd like you to look around and I'd like you to shout out words that tell me, that says, what is it you see and what is it you're thinking and what is it you're feeling? Just shout out some words.
Taxi.
AK-47. Humidity. Hot. How are you feeling? Tired. Anxious. Okay, open your eyes, please, and nudge the person next to you if they haven't. Yeah. So here's the thing. You haven't been to the Congo. You haven't been. And yet, in your mind, was a picture of what it was going to be like. So how did that get there? How did it get there? Conditioning, absolutely. So you're conditioned to think it. How else? Past experiences, absolutely. So you may have said, well, I've been to Africa before, it's probably going to be like that. What else? Perception, absolutely. So how's that perception built up? Media, absolutely. Media, TV, what else? Shared stories, absolutely. Shared stories. So you've got a picture of it, what's in your mind. But you didn't just tell me about the physical things. You told me it was going to be humid. And you told me you were going to feel anxious as well. An emotion. So you have an emotional expectation. Okay? And the issue is your customers have an emotional expectation. And my challenge to you is, do you understand what it is? And my second challenge is, how are you designing your experience with that in mind? And which bits of that experience are you going to exceed? And which bits of that experience are you actually not going to deliver to because it's going to cost you too much money? So this is an important part of defining what the experience is. And what most organizations do is they look at this rational side of the experience and they ignore this subconscious emotional side of the experience. And what we mean by the subconscious is that Chip explained it very well yesterday when he said, basically, your conscious mind is like the CEO of your mind. Yeah. But actually, all your body, everything else is run by your subconscious. Yeah. How many people can hear the fan? Okay. Before I said to you how many people could hear the fan, were you listening to it? Did you notice it was there? Okay. So a few of you did. Dan. Yeah, but the point is, you know, think about your breathing. Yeah, now I think about your breathing, you're thinking about how am I breathing? Yeah. So all of these things happen in the background and being processed by the brain, and yet we don't really think about this emotional and subconscious part of an experience. And yet customers have emotional experiences. Now, this is, I've been doing some work with Progressive, you know, just rants on the Progressive page about their poor experiences. Yeah. So one of the things that we did back in 2007 was when we, you know, we've been talking to customers, our clients, about this for 10 years now, literally. And one of the things that we always got pushback on was, look, agree with you intellectually, but show me the money. Yeah. You know, prove to me this stuff works. Because, you know, when you're talking, our clients are, tend to be the large corporates. So when you're talking to CEOs and CFOs, you know, what they're interested in is the return. So we basically did 2 years worth of research with London Business School to identify which emotions drive and destroy value. So when I say value, let me be clear about what I'm saying. The word value means increasing customer satisfaction, increasing retention, increasing loyalty. Yeah. You know, which emotions drive those things? And what we discovered, 2 years worth of research with London Business School, what we discovered was that there are 20 emotions that drive and destroy value. So, destroying cluster of emotions, things like feeling hurried. And by the way, we looked at all the emotions out there. We involved the chair of consumer psychology. We involved somebody from the RAND Corporation to look at all the statistical numbers to make sure that this was all independently vetted, etc. So if you are evoking emotions in your customers like disappointed, stress, frustration, then you can statistically prove that these things will destroy value. Net promoter, customer satisfaction, retention. Whenever I use the word value, think of those things. What you want, okay? Then there's this attention cluster of emotions. Now, this is effectively what marketing do. Marketing try to get customers to feel interested in their product. They try to stimulate them. They try to get them to explore their offer. And what we know is that these things, statistically, will drive short-term spend. Okay? So you get a blip by doing all those things and making a customer feel that way. But the reality is to get long-term value, you've got to look at things like customers feeling that you value them, customers feeling cared for, customers feeling they can trust you and happy and being happy with you and pleased with you. And again, we can statistically show that those things happen. This is an example of a credit cards company. And this is therefore what we call their sort of emotional signature. So this is looking at the levels of emotional engagement. So these are the 20 emotions that drive and destroy value. This is whether the customer feels that that's strongly felt or not felt at all. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to get the reds as low as you can, and you're trying to get the greens up as high as you can. And then this is the average business index across all industries, and we've got various different other industry settings. But you can see here that effectively this credit card company weren't doing too well. Too many negative emotions, not enough positive emotions, even getting to the average. And we know average experiences, as we've just gone through, are not very good. Yeah. So now when they're looking to design the experience, obviously the question then becomes, well, which part of the experience did we redesign? And therefore we then broke it down into getting my card, using my card, servicing my account, extending my relationship, financial difficulties and ending my relationship. And just, you know, I could spend 4 hours just talking about this chart, but just look at the reds. This organization was absolutely fine until they started to talk to their customers. Yeah? And then it went downhill. Yeah. So this enables you to then start to understand how you're emotionally engaging with those customers. But even when you do start to build a good experience, and this is me with my camera again. In the States, when you say your name's Colin, everybody looks at you a bit strange sometimes. And you know, at Starbucks now, lots of Starbucks, they say to you, what's your name? Yeah, and the first time this happened, I said, what's my name? I said, Colin. And they wrote it on the cup, and they said, coffee for Colin. And I went, oh, that's nice. They called me by my name. I'm not skinny latte, yeah. The only reason I ever order skinny latte is because it's the only time I'll ever be called skinny, but there you go. So I went in there this day, and they said, Colin, there's coffee for Colin. But, you know, you can do these things intellectually, but sometimes it doesn't work. The next day they said Colin. Yeah. The next day I was called Coey. And the following day I was called Colin. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. Yeah. So what do we mean by a subconscious experience? So the subconscious is the things that you see, but you don't necessarily see in your mind. Now, how many times have you gone to buy a new car, you know, a red BMW, and suddenly on the streets there are hundreds of red BMWs? Let me let you into a little secret. They haven't put more cars on the street. Yeah? It's because your subconscious has started to see them. Yeah? They've started to see them. Examples. You go into the hotel, you put your bag on your bed, you open your case, you go to hang your clothes up, and you're confronted by these. What do these say? These say, absolutely, hello thief. That's the subconscious message. We think you're going to nick our hangers, yeah? The good news is, little tip, Hilton Garden Inn don't have these. So I filled my case up. Right. You go into a bank and they put pens on chains. You know, this stuff is crazy. Yeah? Not thinking about the subconscious experience. So in our last book, I'm going to be doing a book signing at 3 o'clock over at Austin at the conference center. We started to pull this together into what we call experience psychology. Okay, and it's actually an amalgamation of lots of the different speeches that you've been hearing over the last couple of days. So looking at this subconscious thing, some really interesting stuff. They did a test in a wine store where they played French music in a wine store. And guess what happened to the sales of French wine? Yeah? Went up by a ratio of 5 to 1. Just by playing French music. If you ask the customer when they walked out the door, why did you buy the French wine? Yeah, they wouldn't say, oh, well, because they play French music. Oh, I just thought I haven't tried it for a while. You know, thinking about that level of detail. They'd done another test up in Boston of people, and they had this sort of racing game, computer racing game of cars, and they had one car that was in the Red Bull logo, and the other four cars were just blank colours, grey colour, okay? And so they performed exactly the same. But the people that drove the Red Bull car drove faster, had more accidents, and were more risk takers. Yeah, the power of the brand. Yeah, and the subconscious experience. You start to think about logos. Everybody seen this Tour de France logo? What can you see in the logo? Can anybody see? The bicycle. Can everyone see the bicycle? Front wheel, back wheel, the guy there? Yeah. FedEx? Yeah, the arrow? Yeah. Amazon? Smiley face, A to Z? You know, subconscious messages. Yeah. And so therefore, trying to put all of these various different academic theories, because, you know, here's a surprise for you again. And it sometimes amazes me how people don't realize this. Human beings, we are all human beings. Customers are human beings. Yeah? As such, we have experiences every day. Every day. all we are saying when we are segmenting a customer experience is we are saying that human being in a customer setting when they are as a customer. So all of the theory about, you know, how the brain works, human dynamics, behavioral psychology, and all that stuff applies in the experience. And therefore, irrationality is part of that. Yeah, we know that that's the case. So there's a thing called, I don't know if everyone's aware, called cognitive dissonance, which is basically around the fight between our primitive side of the brain, yeah, or our primitive part of the brain, and our frontal lobe. So our primitive part of the brain says we have to go off and do things, you know, run away, fight, have sex, do all these things, you know, and our frontal lobe controls that. And therefore, we sometimes fight, you know, and you hear people say it. Everybody said, I'm in two minds about that. You know, well, my head says this and my heart says that. You know, it comes out in our language. You know, it's the fight between, I want to go on holiday, but I could put it on my credit card, but I don't really want to. Yeah, you know, should I do that with all the recession at the moment? So understanding that customers go through that is important. Quick game of new or old. I'd like you to, when I point to these, I'd like you to shout out whether you think these pictures are new or old. This one, new or old. Okay, so what happened there? Okay, well, what happens is that your mind sees something, but you need to give it relevance. You need to give it relevance. So what you do is your mind searches back into something that says, well, yeah, I remember these old popular mechanics. I remember haircuts like that. I remember phones that were like that. I can now give it meaning. And because I give it meaning, I can say whether it's new or old. But here's the issue. You probably took half the time, less than half the time, to actually make the decision. It probably took you a hell of a lot longer to actually say the word new or old, yeah, than it did to actually to process the information. Daniel Kahneman, Professor Kahneman, won the prize for behavioral economics, talking about the fact that actually the way that countries should be measured is not by GDP, but it's by happiness. The level of happiness that their citizens have, and actually the UK government have started some tests on this to look at the citizens' happiness. And guess what? America and the UK come about 30th in the League of Happy Countries. Yeah, that once you've got above about $20,000, your levels of happiness don't increase. And some of the happiest countries in this world are some of the poorest countries in this world. Yeah, but their happiness levels are much greater. What Kahneman, and that's what, you know, he's been pushing this as an idea, and he won this Nobel Prize on it. And part of this behavioral economics is that he talks about this peak end rule, and he says it, humans, what people remember is they remember the peak emotion, and they remember the end emotion. Okay, you remember the peak emotion. That peak emotion could be negative or it could be positive. And you remember the end emotion. You know, so I always think about Titanic. You know, what do you remember from Titanic? The ship going down and, you know, Jack in the water as he slips away and that type of stuff. You know? So, again, my challenge is, yeah, is your experience deliberate? Is your experience deliberate? Is it what you want it to be, or does your experience just happen? Because most experiences just happen because of all of the things that have conspired, all of the culture of the organization, the systems they have in place, the measurements they have in place, the type of people that they recruit. All those things conspire to deliver the experience that you have. And some of the peak emotions are negative, unfortunately, today, because they haven't been deliberated over. They haven't been thought about. Other examples is, you know, this goals and sub-goals. You know, where did you sit when, those of you that are sitting, where did you sit when you came in here? You know, you have a goal. I'm going to go and listen to this presentation. I don't know if it's very good. Well, I'm going to sit on the side because I may be able to scoot out if the guy's boring. Yeah. You know, so you have goals, a big goal, but you then have individual sub-goals. And understanding your customer's goals and sub-goals becomes important. Kahneman also talks about the fact that people don't want to lose things. We will fight much more not to lose something than we will to gain something. Okay? We will fight much more not to lose something than we will to gain something. If I turned around to you now and said, right, we're going to, I'm going to flip a coin. Yeah? If I win, you give me $50. And if you win, I'll give you $50. Most of you would turn around and go, nah, odds aren't very good on that. Don't like that. Yeah. What Kahneman has proved, that it's the ratio is about 3-1. So if I said to you, here's $150, I'll give you $150 if you lose. And if I win, you give me $50. It's about a ratio of 3-1. Yeah, we human beings do not want to lose things. And therefore, that has to be designed in the experience. So some, you know, a practical example. We've just been doing some work with one of the retailers over here. And this is one of the banners outside their stores. Okay? And what they're trying to say is that they've got a sale on. But guess what a number of their customers thought? They're going out of business. Absolutely. You know, the power of the experience. This is, I'm going to play a video. And this is a guy called Darren Cornish. Darren is an English guy. He works for the largest insurance company in England. And we did some work there where we were looking again at this subconscious experience. What happened was people were phoning into the call center, placing an order for a policy, a motor policy. And then within about 4 or 5 days, they were phoning back, okay, and saying, where's my policy? All right, so let me play it, and Darren can explain it a bit better than I.
So we identified in one of our big contact centres that we had a very high percentage, 75% of customers following a interaction, where in that interaction... all that should have happened from then is that their documents following that interaction with the changes they requested were sent to them. 75% were calling back saying, am I sure that I should be expecting my documents today, tomorrow? Because I haven't got them. So that was driving in thousands of telephone calls each day into our organisation. What we learned when we listened to the staff calls, our contact centre agents' calls, was that almost without exception, the frontline staff were using a particular phrase. And what they were saying at the end of the conversation is, your documents should be with you within 4 to 5 working days. Sometimes the customer would say, well, will they be with me? And the staff member would say, well, yeah, with Royal Mail, our post-delivery people in the UK, we can't be absolutely certain. But more often than not, the customer would just hear that, And the call would end. The customer would then clearly reflect on it, feel anxious. When will they receive those documents? And make 75% of them would make that call back within 3, 4, 5 days. What we worked with the staff is to understand why they were saying this. And because, of course, what you learn is that your staff very quickly adapt and work out to how to avoid the complaint that they could possibly get. Now, in the process and in the policy, what they should have been saying to the customer is, your documents will be with you in 4 to 5 days. The staff had worked out that actually only, say, 70 or 80% of those documents through the postal system do get to the customer in 4 to 5 days. So they'd slightly changed their phrasing to cover themselves, so that they weren't effectively promising something they couldn't guarantee to happen. So the simple way forward with this was, because we weren't going to change the entire UK postal system service standards, it just wasn't going to happen, the simple way forward was to shift the language to, your documents will be with you within 7 working days. Now, almost without fail, customers are more than happy with that. It tends to just be a confirmation of what they know has just been changed anyway. immediately we saw the callbacks dramatically drop. In fact, we went from 75% to 6% of those customers having those interactions calling back in a matter of weeks.
So in a matter of weeks, by changing one word from should to will, massive cost savings. Millions of phone calls going in there, literally millions of phone calls. Again, the power of the subconscious experience, thinking about not just what you're saying, but the way that you're saying it, the words that you're using. Because what happens is this. You do things to customers, okay? You do things to customers. Because of what you do, they feel something. And because of what they feel, that therefore affects value. Yeah, value, what you get out of things. Loyalty, retention, increase in net promoter, whatever it may be. But the key issue is this, yeah? When you ask customers what they want, yeah, customers sometimes will tell you the wrong thing. So Disney know, when they ask customers what they would like to eat at a Disney theme park, customers say, well, I'd like to have an option of a salad. What Disney also know is that people don't eat salads at theme parks. They eat hot dogs and hamburgers. So just saying what the customer wants is the wrong thing. And therefore for us, and this again came out of the last book, is it's critical to understand what customers want, what they desire, but also what drives value. So up here, what you've then got is this conscious box, which is what customers say that they want and that you can prove drives value. I want this and it drives value. But these two boxes are probably the most interesting for us. Down here is this deception box. This is where customers are saying that they want something, but actually it drives no value. So we're doing some work with up in New York. A client up there turned around and said, called us in and said, look, we've just been doing customer sat. Customers said they wanted to us to improve billing. We've improved billing. We spent millions of dollars on the system. Took us a year to implement. We've been running it for 9 months now. And guess what? Our customer sat hasn't moved one bit. So what? You know, where's that? That's here. Customers saying that they want something, but it not driving value. They focused on the wrong thing. The subconscious part is up here, which is where customers actually say that they want something or don't say that they want something, but it still drives value. When you go to buy a new car, do you turn around to the car dealer and say, has it got cup holders? Has it got a radio? But if you bought the car and it didn't have cup holders and radio, you'd probably be upset. So you have to understand and plot your experience against these things. This is a client in Dubai. Let me ask you a question before I do this. What network, when you're choosing a network carrier, AT&T, Verizon, whatever else, what's the key thing that you look for? Does it work? Connectivity, reliability? Absolutely. Okay. So that's what customers will normally tell you. Bearing in mind, this is Dubai. Okay, so Dubai is a small place. Don't know if anybody's ever been there, but it's quite a small place. Their network coverage runs at 98%. Yeah? This is parts of their experience. So this is breaking down their experience in different parts. So the quality of the network, the reliability of the network, the speed of problem resolution, the helpfulness of the agent, the accuracy of the bill. So all different parts of the experience. This is blue here is what customers say that they want, the desired. And the grey is what is affecting value, what you get. Yeah. And look here, look at these three. Customers say that they want them, but look, no grey. They don't drive any value. So you spend loads of money doing that, and you don't get anything for it. And you won't be able to read it from there, but it's about that's about the reliability of the network. Because when you ask customers what is it they want, they go, I want reliability. This is Dubai, 98% coverage. They could have spent a load of money on making it to 99%, but it was actually focusing on the wrong thing. If you look up here, there are things up here where small blue lines, so customers are not necessarily saying that they want them, but look at the value they drive. And this is about having a positive presence in my local community. Customers don't say, well, I want you to see that you've got a positive presence in my local community, but look at the value that it drives. So a subconscious experience. You have to think about things and therefore design the experience with that in mind. electrical retailer we did some work with. They basically had this home delivery when we looked at their redesigning their home delivery experience. And when we walked that experience, we turned around and said to them, you know, well, what's your customer feeling like when you're delivering this television? And they go, well, we don't know. We haven't done any research on that. And what we found was that customers were feeling excited, anticipation, because their 50-inch TV was coming down the road. Yeah, you talk to the van drivers, and they would say, well, what are you doing today? Oh, I've got 3 drops on today. 3 drops? What do you mean? You've got to drop them. And then, no, we hope you're not going to drop them. But, you know, we said, well, don't think of yourself as a van driver. Think of yourself as Father Christmas. You're bringing, this brand new thing. Customers are anticipating this. And by the way, at the end of this, what we want you to do, once you've finished your installation, we want you to make sure that the customer is watching you, and we want you to get a cloth out, and we want you to rub down the television. Yeah? Even if it's not dirty. Yeah? Because what message does that send? You know, care, professionalism, this is really important to them. This is new. This is something you should be proud of. Yeah? Massive increase in sales following on from that. So you've got to design your experience. Okay? This is a credit card company again, and this is the classic flow chart. Okay? So this is awareness, getting my card. So this is, I'm getting a new credit card. Awareness, I'm getting the card, I'm evaluating the offer, I fill out the application, I wait for the confirmation, but I wait for the confirmation for a while. Cognitive dissonance sets in. I think to myself, should I really have this another credit card? And so on and so forth. This is the classic flow chart that I guess people use in terms of a process. But I would advise what you do is you map the experience, not the process. You either walk the experience yourself, you get somebody to walk in experience. We shadow customers. Just, you know, depending on whether your experience is physical or online, whatever it may be, you know, try and walk what the customer does. Yeah, everybody heard of ethnography and all that type of stuff? Yeah. And then once you've got this map down, what you then start to look at is where are the psychological moments of this experience? Where are the psychological moments? So, look, this is where cognitive dissonance fits in. Because actually, waiting for confirmation of whether I've got my credit card or not, I'm got this battle between my mind of should I actually be doing this or not. This is this point here is the Peken rule, because what happened with this organisation was that they said that they would give you lots and lots of benefits when you joined the credit card company. You'd get in the lounges free, you'd get upgraded in hotels. But what they didn't tell you was that when they gave you all the pack, you basically had to fill out 20 sheets of paper that went off to all the different partners. And then you had to wait for 3 weeks while all the different partners came back to you and gave you all the stuff. Yeah, and I'm flying next week, and actually I want it this next week. I thought I got it straight away. So my peak negative emotion, yeah, was at this point here. So understanding those psychological points, but then also understanding the positive emotions. The positive emotions that are being evoked as you go on, and I'm sure you're ahead of me, thinking about then the negative emotions that are going on. And what we traditionally find is that there is massive cost savings to be made, because it's very simple. Poor service costs money. Poor service costs money. And therefore, starting to look at this experience and map it in this way enables you to really start to get a picture of what your experience is like. And then consequently, these purple areas here are effectively making those changes. But what you can see from these two is we've managed to cut out all of this work that was being done here. And therefore you end up with the before and the after. This is designing a deliberate experience. This is thinking about what is causing these negative things. Is it the measurement that we have in place? What are the things that it is causing us to do? And recently, Forrester have done a case study, and this is one of, you know, probably the furthest you can get away to the audience at South by Southwest, but this is Maersk, a shipping line, global shipping line. Right? They ship stuff around between, you know, parts of the globe, okay? And they've gone through this process with us, and what they've done is they've managed to... Everybody know of Net Promoter? Yep. Okay. There's a really good book, if you haven't heard of Net Promoter, a really good book called The Ultimate Question. And it's this is the question that most organizations are now turning to instead of customer satisfaction. And the question is, what is the likelihood of you to recommend your product to a friend or colleague? Yeah, what is the likelihood of you to recommend your product to a friend or colleague? It's a scale of 0 to 10. If you're 0 to 6, you're a detractor. If you're a 7 and an 8, you're a neutral. If you're a 9 or a 10, you're a promoter. What you want are promoters, people that talk about your business so you get word of mouth going. You minus off your promoters from your detractors and you come up with a net promoter score. With Maersk, their net promoter score when we started with them was minus 10. Okay? And in 2 years, they've moved it to plus 30, a 40-point move. Okay? And this is, and the reason I'm just using this is a left-brain, logical organization because they have to be because they're shifting stuff all around the globe. Okay? So understanding that deliberate experience becomes key. But the last thing I'm, last piece I'm just going to talk to you about very briefly before I take any questions. It is, I'm going to do one last thing with you. Can I ask you to close your eyes again, please? Can I ask you to point towards north? Point towards north. Wherever you think north is, put your hands out. Point towards wherever you think north is. Okay, open your eyes. See where everyone's pointing? Yeah, there's consensus for you then. Yeah. And before anybody asks, I haven't got a bloody clue. Okay? So why do I ask you to do this? About 15 years ago, I was working at British Telecom, and I was SVP of customer experience at BT, 3,500 people working for me, and my boss said something that was to change my life. He said, Colin, I'd like you to improve the customer experience, but I'd like you to do it at least cost. Have you ever noticed that little bit they throw in at the end? Yeah. And I went back to my office and I thought, right, improve the experience. Right. What's a customer experience? What's that meant to be? And we've already gone through what we think it is now. Right. But the second thing I thought was, what is the experience we are trying to deliver? And I thought, wow, I don't know. I'm in charge of 3,500 people. I haven't got a clue what the experience is we're trying to deliver. So I brought in the team, asked them, went around the organization, asked them. Yeah, everybody had a different opinion. Everybody was heading to where they thought north was. Yeah, and everybody effort would end up in a different location. So it meant that marketing do what they thought was the right thing. Customer service were doing what they thought was the right thing. Yeah, sales were doing what they thought the right thing, but nobody had a clear articulation of what the experience is. So one of the biggest things, again, I've learned over doing this for the last 15 years is you have to define what the experience is that you are trying to deliver, and it clearly should be one that drives value for you. And as over 50% of a customer experience is about emotions. Okay, and we've talked about that a lot today. Over 50% of a customer experience is about emotions. Therefore, it begs the question, what emotions are you trying to evoke in your customers? What emotions are you trying to evoke in your customers? Because I would argue you cannot deliver and build and design a great experience that drives value unless A, you know what value looks like, and B, you know where you're trying to head. what is that experience that you're trying to deliver? And that becomes a key part of your experience. Okay, I'm going to finish off as I started off with a video that's got nothing to do with anything. I just like it. And then we'll take a few questions. There you go. So thank you. So they've got a couple of the books over the bookstore. I'm going to be signing books later. But any questions? We've got about 10 minutes if anybody wants to ask any questions. I would suggest that you're probably not as logical as you think, yeah? But what you have to do, therefore, is start to look at what your customers do. Spend time with your customers, you know, old phrase, but walk in your customers' shoes. Yeah, you know, literally sit by your customers and ask them what they're doing, why they're doing it, what is going through their brain, what are they thinking about, why didn't they click here, do this, do that, and just try to understand that in a much greater depth, or get somebody that's a bit more empathic to go through that experience.
I'm a coach and I'll move you right into that space.
There we go.
I'm interested in two things. What research do you think could be used for the emotional clusters?
Sure. So the process that we use for this emotional signature is a fairly sophisticated form of statistical analysis, which is based around structured equation modeling, which basically most research looks at correlation. In other words, 27% of people prefer a black pen to a blue pen or whatever it may be. Structured equation modeling is an advanced form of mathematics that looks at patterns for things. Yep. So that's where.
It's
survey based. That the trick is not in the survey. The trick is in the analysis. Yeah. So the surveys are normal, but it's the way that you do the analysis is the clever bit, and therefore, and working with different clients, we either work on an individual project basis or we've had clients that we've been working with for 10 years. So it varies. Sure.
And lots of times they don't
want to
pay for the ultimate experience for their client.
Sure. Well, I wouldn't advocate that they should necessarily be paying for the ultimate experience.
Right.
It's an experience. Sure. It's the experience that drives value. So for me, you've got to, you know, again, you have to cut your cloth according to what you can do. Some of it can just be just walking in the shoes of customers, getting them to walk in the shoes of customers. It doesn't have to be grand research projects. It can be just as simple as looking at things through another pair of eyes. Okay, sure. So which brands go above and beyond and think about these emotional experiences? Apple would be one. I mean, Apple is clearly a very emotional engagement. Lots of hotels, you think of Mandarin Oriental, you think of Ritz-Carlton. If you think of, obviously, Disney, Harley-Davidson, you know, lots of those organizations are building on the relationship and the emotions that they have with their customers. And I'm starting to see more and more try to get down this route as well.
If I'm building an experience for an audience that's stereotypically known as for being irrational,
yep,
and our business asks for something that I can tell won't go over well with them, I find myself using the phrase, that doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like something they would want or that,
yep,
brings them any value. How do I convince my own coworkers?
Sure.
That the customer,
sure,
value is greater than
the, yeah, and really good question. So how do you convince your coworkers that this can be the right approach? For me, it's two things. One is either getting, again, your coworkers to experience what it's like to be a real customer. Yeah, you know, get them to physically have that experience, point out those parts of that emotional experience. Or the second reason is, and one of the reasons why we invented this emotional signature was because sometimes you've got to appeal to them in their language. So most senior people in business are looking for numbers. So you have to not just intellectually talk to them, but you have to back it up with finance. Yeah. So if you can back it up with statistics, yeah, and you can say, look, this is statistically valid, blah, 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 then you're starting to talk their language if you're not appealing to them in the first way. Yes.
How does this model change in that environment?
Okay, good question. So in B2B, how does it change? Because clearly in B2B, you've got lots of decision makers. When I was in BT, I was in the B2B side of things, so I absolutely know that well. If you look at Maersk as a classic example, it's just more complicated. Different customer groups you have to treat in a different ways. So if I looked at what we did with Maersk, we ended up segmenting, I think, 18 different customer sets from decision makers to invoicing across different countries, because different countries, different cultures have different perceptions. It just becomes more complicated and wider. Last question. How do you measure the emotions? Good question. You can absolutely clearly ask customers how they are feeling at that point, and that absolutely is a good way of doing it. You can look at their behavior of what they're doing and interpret that, you know, they are behaving in this way. That's probably because they don't trust us. I'm phoning in the example of, you know, they're getting lots of repeat phone calls. Well, why? Because customers are confused, etc. Ideally, and where this will get to, is you stick them under an MRI scan and you see what their brain does. And I keep coming to South by Southwest, but nobody seems to have invented a machine that does that yet. But I'm sure it's not far away. So thanks very much for your time, and good luck.